Good morning, Dr. Ross. How are you on this Saturday morning?
I'm very well, thanks, Brent. Lovely to talk to you, mate.
Let's start with a couple of listener questions. Alex says, a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Ross was talking about gut dysbiosis. I suffer daily with gut dysbiosis. All the symptoms he stated I have and more. I had a pathology test confirming an overload of bad bacteria. Dr. Ross said he was researching into a tribiotic to help with relief with this debilitating condition. Alex says, I am desperate to know when it could be available to suffering people like myself. I've been to over 30 doctors and except for one, all are clueless and no empathy. Any help would be much appreciated.
Well, firstly, mate, as you know, I cannot mention any specific product name, but if they send you an email, I'm more than happy to give you the name of it. And the other problem is that I actually developed this tribiotic myself. So it's not a probiotic, it's a tribiotic, which has a prebiotic. And basically, I explain to people what this means. Prebiotic is the food that bacteria eat. So there are a whole lot of different prebiotics. To give an example, onions and garlic are prebiotics. Kefir is prebiotics. Sauerkraut, prebiotics. And they feed healthy food into healthy bacteria. But as does fruit and vegetables, any form of fruit and vegetables are the feed that healthy bacteria eat. The defective bacteria, they eat all the processed packaged crap masquerading as food that many people eat, stuff in a box or a container with a use-by date. And some people call that food. I just call it junk. But that aside, the probiotic are the healthy bacteria. So in a healthy gut, there's about 85% of the bacteria, and we've got somewhere between 40 to 100 trillion bacteria living in our gut. So if you've got at least 85% of those healthy bacteria, different bacterial species, lactobacillus, bifidobacteria, a lot of these healthy ones, then you have a healthy gut, but many people don't for all the reasons we talk about. So just the fact that we're having ultra-processed foods, all the synthetic chemicals we're exposed to, all the antibiotics we've had over the years, even cesarean birth, where the babies aren't coming down the birth canal where they pick up the healthy maternal vaginal bacteria, they start life behind the eight ball without the healthy gut microbiome as well. So there's a lot of reasons for gut dysbiosis, which just get worse as you get older. And I'll give you an example. I spoke to a man a few months ago who's been a patient of mine for a while who's had chronic fatigue syndrome for 30 years. And I believe chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, and even long COVID is a form of gut dysbiosis. And I said to this guy, well, look, you should be having at least two or three pieces of fruit per day, 3 to 5 servings of vegetables per day. And he said, oh, Doc, I hate fruits and vegetables. I said, well, there's your issue. Your gut's not healthy because you're not getting in the healthy fruits and vegetables, and you're not growing healthy gut bacteria. So that's the probiotic part of it. The prebiotic part of it is the chemicals made by healthy bacteria. And these chemicals, a lot of them we call short-chain fatty acids, butyrate, propionate, acetate. A lot of people don't realize that serotonin, which is the mood chemical, 90% of serotonin is made in the gut by healthy gut bacteria. So you need a healthy pre, pro, and probiotic, and postbiotic, and also you need to have the fruits and vegetables. So if anyone wants to email you in, I'm happy to give you the name of the tribiotic, but I've got to say I designed it. I'm the ambassador for the company that's selling it, especially overseas, but you can order it on the internet.
A serious question, serious comment. A lot of people listening to us won't have 5 servings of fruit and veg a day. A lot of the Australian population won't have 5 servings of fruit and veg a day. What do they do? Does this tribiotic make up for not having 5 servings of fruit and veg?
I don't think anything makes up for not having the serves of the fruit and vegetables per day. And tragically, as you say, less than 10% of people have that amount of fruit and vegetables per day. And those who do have the lowest rates of heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's in the community. And let me say, for all those people who think that, oh, they have a healthy diet to keep their cholesterol lower, the fruit and vegetables doesn't do zip to your cholesterol. What it does is keep your immune system healthy, keeps your gut healthy. So if people aren't having their fruit and vegetables per day, the doses that I said, and I'll repeat them because it's so important, more important than taking a tribiotic, by the way, 2 or 3 pieces of fruit per day, 3 to 5 servings of vegetables per day. Servings about a half a carrot. So it's still not a huge amount of fruit and vegetables, But as you say, most people don't have that amount.
Joanne says, I heard Dr. Ross talking about fish and krill oil a few weeks ago. I'm pretty sure Dr. Ross said that krill was a better supplement to take than fish oil. Joanne says, what about green lip muscle tablets for joint health support? Should we take both or just krill oil?
Let me say to Joanne, I didn't say it was a better supplement. I said it was easier to take because with krill, 1,000 milligrams of krill is probably the equivalent of 4 fish oil capsules a day. Now, fish oil capsules are not omega-3. Fish oil capsules have omega-3 in them, but 1,000 milligrams of fish oil is only about, typically, around 180 milligrams of omega-3. So 1,000 milligrams of krill is probably about 180 milligrams of omega-3. So all the studies show that you get the cardiac benefits when you get up to 1,000 milligrams a day of omega-3. So you've got to take a fair bit of this stuff. But in terms of for your joints, krill is a pretty good anti-inflammatory, as are 4 capsules a day of standard fish oil. But the New Zealand green lip muscles, that they have a very good effect, again, on arthritis, a few other things. So basically, being the anally retentive neurotic that I am, I take all of them. I take fish, I take krill, and I take green lip muscles. And you see, you and I have spoken before about the omega-3 index. Now, the omega-3 index is a pinprick test that measures the amount of omega-3 you have in your red cell membrane. So basically, you get this little kit sent to you. You prick the finger, you put it on a bit of blotting paper, the blood, and send it off to a company, and they measure your omega-3 index. Now, the average omega-3 index of the Australian population is about 4%, of the Japanese population, about 8%. Those who have an omega-3 index 8% or above, compared with those who have a 4% omega-3 index, have a 90% reduction in sudden cardiac death.
Tony asks, he says he loves our segment. He's 63-year-old male, having borderline high blood pressure. He said no other heart issues. Blood pressure's between 130 and 140 on 80 at home. I get white coat syndrome when I go to the doctor. He said, could you ask what blood pressure medication would be good for that?
Firstly, when you look at blood pressure, you divide it into a few ways of management. So there are 5 lifestyle things people can do that will lower their blood pressure. And look, I say this all the time. If all my patients lost between 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 kilos, depending on how much they need to lose, I would be twiddling my thumbs all day. We'd see blood pressure plummeting. We'd see heart disease plummeting, diabetes plummeting. So the key thing for managing blood pressure is to lose abdominal fat, number one. And you want your waist circumference to be at least below 95 centimetres for a male, 80 centimetres for a female. Sorry, ladies, I don't make the rules. Number two is exercise. So 3 to 5 hours of moderate exercise per week, 2/3 cardio, 1/3 resistance training. Number three, avoid sugar and salt like the plague, because people have a lot of salt in their food, a lot of sugar in their food. Drives up your blood pressure. Number four, grog. Keep your grog below 3 standard drinks per day, most days of the week if you drink. If you don't drink, don't start. Number five is manage your stress as much as anyone can manage their stress in this crazy world. There are some natural things that help blood pressure as well. The bergamot products that I have the association with, I can't say what particular one, the ingredient is BJE 100. And chiolic garlic, 2 capsules of those in the morning, also helps your blood pressure. A lot of people love this one, Brent. A couple of pieces of dark chocolate per day, small pieces of dark chocolate, greater than 70% cocoa, helps control the blood pressure. And if you have sleep apnea, and all males do, all postmenopausal females have a degree of sleep apnea, if you wake up in the morning unrefreshed, you're getting sleepy during the day, get your sleep apnea sorted out, because managing that will drop your blood pressure. But after that, it's pills. So for a standard, otherwise healthy person like Tony, who should hopefully have had a coronary calcium score at some stage in his life to make sure he doesn't have muck in his arteries. So if he has a low calcium score and all the issue is blood pressure, he wants to be running his blood pressure when he's sitting quietly by himself with no one else around for 5 minutes and never first thing in the morning. Say, check it maybe 10 o'clock one week, 3 o'clock the next week, 9 o'clock the next week, just to see what it's doing and getting a pattern over a few months. He wants his blood pressure to be sitting at around 120 over 80. And I think the best initial blood pressure pill for an otherwise healthy person is either a drug called an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin receptor blocker. And just to give people the common names of those drugs, ramipril, and Coversil or Perindopril. They're the common ACE inhibitors, and the common angiotensin receptor blockers are any drugs that end in sartan. So telmisartan, candesartan, irbesartan, all of those, sartan, olmesartan, those drugs are all very safe, minimal side effects drugs that can really control the blood pressure. The only thing I would say for anyone who takes an ACE inhibitor, perindopril or ramipril, that 10% of people who take them do get a dry cough. And if you get the dry cough, you can't take the pill, but then you can always take the angiotensin receptor blocker. But we're finding out that people that have much higher blood pressures than Tony often need two or three pills to control their blood pressure. Once you need three pills and your blood pressure is not being well controlled, then you need to work up with a specialist like me who's going to look for some secondary causes of blood pressure. But 90 to 95% of cases of blood pressure are your genes in this environment.
Our last question, last listener question. Sarah says, is there a multi-B tablet that doesn't have folic acid? She wants to take the recommended folic acid tablet that you have recommended. And she's looked at Biocuticles B for women, and it's got folic acid in it. There are other multivitamin B tablets that have folic acid in it. Is there a multi-B that doesn't?
Not that I'm aware of. That's why they call them multi-B, and folic acid is otherwise known as vitamin B9. And so when you have a multivitamin, it's going to have that folic acid in it. There is, however, a multivitamin on the market that's Australian-made, it does have the fourth generation folic acid that I'm talking about. And at the end of this segment, my friend, I will send you a picture of that multivitamin so that people can again hassle you to get the name.
Okay, great, fantastic. That's good news. Let's talk about some of these topics. You were mentioning about three standard drinks per day. There is new news. Moderate drinking apparently does not boost longevity. This is new evidence. Moderate alcohol consumption has previously been associated with potential health benefits, including reduced mortality risk. However, recent research suggests that these findings were flawed, and compared to abstaining from alcohol, moderate alcohol consumption has no significant benefits for longevity, Ross.
Yeah, well, this is a study published in a journal called the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs, and they looked at 107 observational trials of 4.8 million people. And over the study period time, there were 425,564 deaths. And they looked at the comparison between people who were lifelong non-drinkers as opposed to people who were defined as moderate drinkers, which is up to 14 drinks per week as opposed to people who are heavy drinkers, and looked at the death rates. And they got rid of what they're calling low-quality studies, and they're suggesting it was the low-quality studies that suggested that there was a health benefit from drinking alcohol. That's what they're saying in this particular study. And basically what they said is that there was no actual difference in the death rate between the lifelong non-drinkers and the people who had up to 14 drinks per week. Now, again, I'm not saying I disagree with this particular study, but the problem I have with most of these studies is many of them were performed in America. And I say all the time, I'm not trying to justify my alcohol consumption or anyone's alcohol consumption, but I really feel it depends on who the alcohol is hanging around with. Now, what do I mean by that? If you combine alcohol with a crappy diet or combine alcohol with cigarettes, you're not going to get any health benefit from the alcohol. If you combine alcohol with being lonely or depressed and you're using alcohol as an antidepressant, you're not going to get any health benefits even from the low consumption of alcohol. But if you look at the well-done studies that were done in places like the Mediterranean, so for example, I'll give you two major studies, one called the Copenhagen Heart Study, which is a study of 13,000 Danes followed for 12 years, and they looked at their alcohol consumption. So those Danes who were teetotalers versus the people who had two standard beer drinks a day as opposed to two standard spirit drinks a day or two standard glass of wine. So a standard glass of wine is 125 mils. It's one midi of beer. It's a non-grandfather's nip of scotch is a spirit. And so we're saying there, two drinks a day of beer, no benefit or detriment over the non-drinkers. Two spirits a day, compared with the non-drinkers, a 30% increased risk for heart disease and cancer just by even having two spirit drinks a day. But when they looked at the wine drinkers, there was a 50% reduction in heart disease and cancer in a place like Copenhagen, where they have a better quality diet than they have in the US. When they looked at another study by a guy called Serge Renault, guess where that one was from, 36,000 Frenchmen over 12 years showed exactly the same thing. Two standard drinks of red wine per day, 50% reduction in heart disease and cancer. Then when you go to different parts of America, there's been a thing that's been going on for years called the Nurses' Health Study and the Male Physicians Trial in Boston. So it's a more affluent area of America where they do tend to have a better diet. They found there that the doctors, for example, who had one glass of red wine a day, had an 80% reduction in sudden cardiac death. When they looked at the nurses over 15 years, those who had one glass of wine a day had a 25% increased risk for breast cancer unless they took a multivitamin, which then negated the risk. So there's a lot of different evidence to say that drinking might have a weak benefit if you combine it with a healthy diet, especially if it's low-dose red wine.
What's the takeaway from this, Ross? I mean, should people adopt an alcohol-free lifestyle or should everything be done in moderation?
Takeaway for me, if you're a non-drinker, you don't start drinking. You don't say, oh, I'm going to start drinking only because this Walker bloke's saying there's a health benefit. What I'm also saying is if you enjoy a glass or two of wine with a meal, with the people you love, and you're not drinking for the wrong reasons, you're depressed, you're lonely, or you're not combining it with crappy food or cigarettes, and you enjoy that, one thing you can't measure in your bloodstream, my friends, a thing called pleasure. And we're not just here to exist for 70, 80, 90 years. We're also here to have a bit of pleasure. And interestingly, I spoke about this on my radio show on Sunday night, and this fellow sent a text in that my father's been having a glass of wine every day during his entire adult life. He's now in his 90s. That's an anecdote. That's not a clinical trial. It's just one example. And you go to places like the Blue Zones, where they have enormous longevity. And most of the Blue Zones, apart from the Seventh-day Adventists living in Loma Linda, where they are mainly non-drinkers, but the other Blue Zones, they all have a glass or two of wine. So I just can't see that if you enjoy one or two glasses of red, that there's no detriment from it. There may not be a major health benefit, but there's certainly no detriment. And if it adds to your pleasure and you're doing it with the people you love and you're enjoying it, keep doing it.
Scientists have discovered that deactivating a protein called IL-11 can extend the healthy life span of mice by nearly 25%. Now, this raises the potential for something similar in humans. However, there has been no research or no studies done with this IL-11 in reference to humans yet.
No. And this IL-11 is a thing called interleukin-11, and it's a thing called cytokines. So during the pandemic, we heard a lot about cytokines, and cytokines are basically, very simply, inflammatory proteins. So when things are going bad in the body, you get these senescent cells and a whole lot of things, you liberate these inflammatory cytokines into the system, and it's like a vicious circle. It makes everything worse. So what they found is when mice were 75 weeks old, which is the human equivalent of around 55 years, when they inhibited this IL-11 in these mice, they extended their lifespan by about 25%. So the potential, and it was also not just extending their lifespan, it's also a marked reduction in cancer-related deaths, inflammation, improved metabolism, less heart disease, etc. So we're talking about them living longer but also living better. So it's the potential, once we would trial this in humans, this IL-11 inhibitor, once we would trial this in humans, it may be getting to the point you reach around age 50, 55, you go in once a year and have an infusion of this stuff, and it may be one of these new U-butte anti-aging drugs.
I suppose the big thing, though, is the question in the future, could aging be delayed in humans? Yes, it probably can be. But if you're going to live more years, you want to live those years in a healthy state.
But that's what this is showing, that it not only made the rats or the mice live longer, but are also they had less chronic disease. You see, I don't believe in lifespan. I believe in health span. Mm-hmm. And health span being as healthy as you can for as long as you can. So I believe in prolonging everyone's life and no one's death. So as soon as someone goes into the death phase, I believe their end should be hastened. That's my. I'm not talking about euthanasia. I'm talking about you're giving them something like regular morphine to hasten their death. So you just put them in this beautiful, peaceful oblivion. And I'm not talking about you're getting a bit dotty, but I'm saying if you've got end stage Alzheimer's disease where you no longer recognise your relatives, or you've had you've got a terminal cancer where you're in your last few weeks of life. Don't prolong the pain and the agony for the person and their relatives. Give them morphine every 4 hours and you put them in this beautiful, peaceful oblivion and they'll drift off pretty quickly in a few days. Or it's what I call the bum wiping rule. If someone else has to wipe your backside because you've had a disabling stroke or an end-stage neurologic disease, why leave those people in misery? So health span is vital to me, not lifespan.
One drop of blood, and they say many diagnoses. So this is something new. If it works, does it not mean we can basically, with one drop of blood, do the test at home?
Yeah, there's certainly potentially be able to do that with a pinprick test, a bit like that omega-3 index I was talking about. Now, you may remember a few years back a company called Theranos. The CEO is now in jail because she came out and basically said the company could do this. But this has actually been proven with science now that was a hoax before. But they're using a technique called infrared spectroscopy. This is a German study published in Cell Reports, a very well-known journal. And basically what they do is they look at the molecular footprint of a whole lot of different diseases and metabolism, things like heart disease, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and also the molecular footprint of cancers as well. They've taken 5,000 blood samples from different people, and they're finding that they're able to predict people's future risk for disease. So I think this is part of what's going to happen in the future, that we'll be going into a clinic, we'll have a pinprick of blood or do it at home, as you say, and send it off to a laboratory, or even just having a genetic screen to say, this is your predicted 10-year risk or 20-year risk or lifetime risk for these conditions. And the thing is, say, for example, now, the oncologists are talking about a liquid biopsy where you take blood from people and it measures the molecular footprint of a particular cancer that might be brewing in your body. And if you don't have those molecular footprints, you can say, well, at the moment, this person appears to be cancer-free. Or if you've had a cancer, they can do these liquid biopsies to see how you're responding to treatment. Extraordinary stuff happening in medicine.
Gosh, our time goes quick when we talk to you, and we always enjoy talking to you, Dr. Ross. Thank you so much again for all you do and for answering our listener questions. I'll get that information off you off air so that people can email me with those details of those particular tablets that we spoke about in the listener questions. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next weekend.
It's always a great pleasure, my friend.